the talisman. His hand made it halfway there before Lila's knife slashed through the air and across his palm. He gasped as blood dripped to the floor.
"I warned you,"
she said, wagging the knife like a finger. "Lila," he said wearily, cradling his hand to his chest. "Please, give it back." But Kel knew she wouldn't. There was a glint of mischief in her eye, a look he knew he had worn himself as her fingers curled around the stone. What would she summon? What could she summon, this gangly little human? She held both hands ceremoniously out before her, and Kel watched, half in curiosity and half in concern, as smoke plumed out between her fingers. It wrapped round her free hand, twisting and hardening until she was holding a beautiful sword in a polished scabbard. Her eyes widened with shock and pleasure.
"It worked,"
she whispered half to herself. The hilt shone the same glossy black of Kel's eye and the stolen stone, and when she pulled the sword free of its sheath, the metal glinted black as well in the candlelight, and solid as any hammered steel. Lila let out a delighted sound. Kel let out a breath of relief at the sight of the sword, it could have been worse, and watched as she set it against the wall.
"So, you see," said Kel carefully. "Now hand it over."
She didn't realize, couldn't realize, that this kind of magic was wrong, or that the stone was feeding on her energy.
"Please, before you hurt yourself."
Lila gave him a derisive glare and fondled the stone.
"Oh, no," she said. "I'm just getting started."
"Lila," began Kel, but it was too late. Black smoke was already pouring between her knuckles, much more of it than before, and taking shape in the room between them. This time, instead of a weapon, it pulled itself into the form of a young man. Not just any young man, Kel realized as the features smoothed from smoke into flesh. It was Kel. The resemblance was nearly flawless, from the coat with its fraying hem to the reddish hair that fell across his face, obscuring his black eye. Only this Kel had no blue eye. Both glistened as hard and black as the rock in Lila's hand. The apparition didn't move, not at first, only stood there, waiting. The Kel that was Kel glared at the Kel that wasn't.
"What do you think you're doing?"
The question was directed at Lila.
"Just having a bit of fun," she said.
"You can't go around making people."
"Obviously I can," she said.
And then the black-eyed Kel began to move. He shrugged off his coat and tossed it onto the nearest chair. And then Kel watched with horror as his echo began to unfasten his tunic one button at a time. Kel gave a small, strangled laugh.
"You've got to be kidding me."
Lila only smiled and rolled the stone in her palm as the Kel that wasn't a Kel slid slowly, teasingly, out of his tunic and stood there bare-chested. His fingers began to undo the belt at his waist.
"Okay enough," said Kel. "Dispel it."
She sighed.
"You're no fun."
"This isn't fun."
"Maybe not for you,"
she said with a smirk as the other Kel continued his striptease, sliding the belt from its loops. But Lila didn't see what he saw. The once blank face of the echo was beginning to change. It was a subtle shift in the magic, the hollow thing starting to fill.
"Lila," insisted Kel, "listen to me. Dispel it now."
"Fine, fine,"
she said, meeting the black-eyed Kel's gaze.
How do I do that?"
"You willed him into being," said Kel, getting to his feet. "Now will him away."
Lila's brow creased and the phantom stopped divesting himself of clothes but did not disappear.
Lila!
I'm trying,
she said, tightening her grip on the stone. At that, the phantom Kell's face contorted, shifting rapidly from vacant to aware to angry. It was as if he knew what was happening. His eyes flicked from Lila's face to her hand and back to her face. And then he lunged. He moved so fast, an instant, a blink, and he was upon her. The stone tumbled from Lila's grip as the Kell that wasn't Kell slammed her back against the wall. His mouth opened to speak, but before he could, his hands dissolved. He dissolved, suddenly back into smoke, and then into nothing. And Lila found herself face to face with the Kell that was Kell, his bloody hand raised to the place where the illusion had been. His command, As Anasai, still echoing through the room. Lila swayed on her feet and caught herself on the chest of drawers, her brief possession of the stone clearly taking its toll the way it had on Kell. She managed to drag in a single shaky breath before he closed his bleeding hand around her throat.
"Where is my knife?" he growled.
"Top drawer,"
she said, gasping. Kell nodded but didn't let her go. Instead, he grabbed her wrist and pinned it back to the wall beside her head.
"What are you doing?"
she snapped, but Kell didn't answer. He focused on the wood, and it began to crack and warp, peeling away and growing up around her wrist. Lila struggled, but in an instant it was done. When Kell let go, the wall did not. He retrieved the stone from the floor as Lila twisted and fought against the makeshift bind.
"What the bloody hell?"
She tried to pull free of the wooden cup as Kell forced himself to pocket the stone.
"You've ruined the wall. How am I supposed to pay for this? How am I supposed to explain this?"
Kell went to the drawer. There he found most of the contents of his pockets. Thankfully, she'd only raided the black coat he'd been wearing, and his knife.
"You can't leave me here like this,"
she muttered. Kell refilled his pockets and ran a thumb over the familiar letters on his blade before returning it to the holster against his forearm. And then he heard the sound of metal sliding free of leather behind him as Lila fetched another dagger from a sheath at her back.
"I wouldn't throw that if I were you," he said, crossing to the window.
"Why's that?"
she growled. "Because," he said, sliding up the glass,
"you're going to need it to saw yourself free."
And with that, Kell stepped up onto the sill and threw. It was a longer drop than he had hoped for, but he landed in a crouch, the air in the alley rushing up to ease his fall. The window had seemed the safest route since Kell wasn't actually sure where in grey London he was or even what kind of house he'd been kept in. From the street he realized it was not a house at all, but a tavern, and when he rounded the corner, he saw the sign swaying in the evening air. It swung from shadow into lamplight and then back to shadow, but Kell knew at a glimpse what it said. The Stone's Throw. He shouldn't have been surprised to see it. All roads seemed to lead here, but it still threw him. What are the odds, he thought, even though he knew that the thing about magic was that it bent the odds. But still. Kell had a strange feeling about the girl, but he pushed it aside. She didn't matter. He had the stone. Now he just had to figure out what to do about it. 4. It took Lila the better part of an hour to hack, slash, and saw herself free. By the time the wood finally gave way under her knife, the blade's edge was irreparably dulled. A portion of the wall was destroyed, and she was desperately in need of a stiff drink. Her coins had not multiplied, but savings be damned. Tonight, she needed the drink. She rubbed the pain out of her wrist, tossed the dulled knife onto the bed and fetched her second, still sharp dagger from the floor where she had dropped it. A steady stream of oaths crossed her lips as she wiped Kell's blood from the blade, and a steady stream of questions filled her head as she sheathed it. But she pushed them all down and dug her revolver out of the drawer, slotting it into its holster. If she'd had it on her at the time, she'd have blown a hole in Kell's head. She was still quietly cursing and pulling her cloak about her shoulders when something caught her eye. The sword, the one she'd summoned, was still propped up against the wall. The bastard hadn't stopped to dispense of that on his way out. Now she lifted it carefully, beautiful thing that it was, and admired the glittering black hilt. It was everything she'd imagine it would be, down to the details carved into the grip. The scabbard hummed beneath her fingers just as the rock had when she'd held it. She wanted to keep the blade, wanted to keep holding it with a strange, bone-deep sense of longing that she didn't trust. Lila knew what it felt like to want something, knew the way it whispered and sang and screamed in your bones. And this felt like that, but wasn't. An imposter of longing. She remembered the way she had felt when she lost the rock, the sudden gutting dizziness that followed, like all the energy had gone out of her limbs, stolen where she wasn't looking. In a strange way it reminded Lila of a pickpocket, a sly piece of sleight of hand. That was the way it worked. A proper trick took two hands, one you paid attention to, the other you failed to notice. Lila had been so focused on the one in front of her face, waving something shiny, that she hadn't noticed the other stealing from her pocket. Bad magic, Kell had called it. No, thought Lila now, clever magic. And clever was more dangerous than bad any day of the week. Lila knew that much. And so, much as it pained her to do it, she went to the open window and cast the sword out. Good riddance, she thought, as she watched it tumble to the alley stones below. Her gaze drifted up to the rooftops and the chimney stacks, and she wondered where Kell had gone. She wondered, but the question spawned a dozen others, and knowing she would never learn the answers to any of them, she slammed the window shut and went to find that drink. A man stumbled through the front door of the stone's throw and nearly fell down the front stairs. Tricky buggers, he thought groggily. Surely they hadn't been there when he entered the tavern only a few hours earlier, or, if they had, they'd gone and changed, rearranged somehow. Maybe there were more of them now. Or fewer. He tried to count them, but his vision blurred and he gave up, swaying on his feet. The man's name was Booth. And he had to piss. The thought rose up out of the fog, and there it was, bright as a light. Booth scuffed his boots along the cobblestones to the nearest alley. He had the decency not to relieve himself on the steps, even if they had come out of nowhere. He half-walked, half-tumbled into the narrow gap between the buildings, realizing only then how dark it was. He couldn't see his own hand, even if he'd been sober enough to look for it, but his eyes kept drifting shut anyway, so it didn't really matter. Booth leaned his forehead against the cool stones of the tavern wall as he pissed, humming softly to himself, a shanty about women and wine and something else that probably began with W, though he couldn't remember now. He let the melody wander off as he refastened his pants, but as he turned back toward the mouth of the alley, his boot caught something on the ground. It skidded away with a scrape before fetching up against the wall, and he might have left it there had a gust of wind not blown the nearest lantern on its hook, sending a flash of brightness into the darkened alley. The shard of light glinted off metal, and Booth's eyes widened. He might have been several pints along, but greed was a sobering thing. And as the light vanished again, he found himself on his hands and knees on the damp alley floor, grasping in the shadows, until his fingers finally curled around the prize. Booth struggled to his feet and toddled a few steps nearer to the lantern light, and there realized that he was holding the casing of a sword, the weapon still safe within. The hilt glittered, not silver or gold or steel, but black. Black as oil and smooth as rock. He wrapped his fingers around the grip and drew the weapon from its sheath, letting out a low groan of appreciation. The metal of the blade was as glossy and dark as the hilt. A strange sword, and rare by the looks of it. Booth weighed it in his meaty hands. It would fetch a pretty penny, a very pretty penny. Only in the right places, of course. Couldn't be thought stolen, of course. Finders keepers, finders sellers, that is, and such, of course. Funny thing, though. His fingertips, where they curled around the hilt, had started to prickle. That is a bit peculiar, he thought, in that calm and distant way that comes with thorough intoxication. He wasn't worried, not at first, but then he tried to loosen his hold on the weapon and couldn't. He told his fingers to let go, but they remained firmly around the sword's gleaming black hilt. Booth shook his hand, first slowly, then vigorously, but couldn't seem to free his fingers from the weapon. And then, quite suddenly, the prickle became a jolt, hot and cold and foreign at once, a very unpleasant feeling. It spread up his arm, beneath his skin, and when he stumbled back a step toward the light at the mouth of the alley, he saw that the veins on the back of his hand, over his wrist and up his forearm, were turning black. He shook his hand harder and nearly lost his balance, but still he couldn't seem to release the sword. It wouldn't let him.
"Let go!"
he grumbled, unsure of whether he was speaking to his own hand or the weapon locked within it. In response, the hand holding the sword, which did not seem to belong to him any more at all, tightened on the hilt. Booth gasped as his fingers turned the blade slowly back toward his own stomach.
"What the devil?"
he swore, grappling with himself, his free hand fighting to hold the other at bay. But it wasn't enough. The thing taking hold was stronger than the rest, and with a single clean thrust, Booth's hand, the one with the sword, drove it into his gut and buried it to the hilt. He doubled over in the alley with a groan, hand still fixed to the grip. The black sword glowed with a dark internal light, and then began to dissolve. The gleaming weapon melted, not down, but in, through the wound, and into Booth's body, into his blood. His heartbeat faltered, and then redoubled, steady and strong in his veins, as the magic spread. His body shuddered, then stilled. For a long moment, Booth, what remained of him, crouched there on the alley floor, motionless, hands to his stomach where the blade had driven in, and where now only an inky black stain like melted wax remained in its wake. And then slowly his arms slipped to his sides, the veins running over them now a true black, the colour of true magic. His head drifted up and he blinked two black eyes and looked around, then down at himself, considering his form. He flexed his fingers, carefully, testing. And then, slowly, steadily, he got to his feet. 7. The Follower. 1. Lila could have simply gone down into the belly of the stone's throw, but she owed Baron enough already. He wouldn't take her coin, either because he thought she needed it or because it wasn't hers to begin with, and she needed the fresh air to clear her head. Other Londons. men walking through magical doors, stones that made something out of nothing. It was all the stuff of stories, of adventures. All of it at her fingertips, and then gone. And Lila left feeling empty, hungry and hollow in a new and terrifying way. Or maybe it was the same kind of hunger she'd always felt, and now the missing thing had a name. Magic. She wasn't sure. All she knew was that holding the stone she'd felt something. And looking into Kel's ruined eye, she'd felt something. And when the magic spun the wood of the wall around her wrist, she'd felt something. Again the questions surge, and again she shoved them down and took in the night air, thick with soot and heavy with impending rain, and trudged through the web of streets and across Westminster to the Barren Tide. The Barren Tide sat near just north of the bridge on the southern side, tucked between Belvedere and York in a crevice of a street called Mariner's Walk, and she'd taken to stopping in on some of her more successful nights before heading back to Powell. The way she'd seen it, it left one less coin for him to skim. She liked the pub because it was full of dark wood and fogging glass, rough edges and rougher fare. Not a smart place to pick pockets, but a fine place to blend in, to disappear. She had little fear of being recognized, either as a girl. The light was always kept low and her hood kept up, or as a wanted thief. Most of the patrons were wanted for something. Her weapons were in easy reach, but she didn't think she'd need them. At the Barren Tide, people tended to mind their own business. On the not-so-rare occasion that a fight broke out, the regulars were more concerned for the safety of their drinks. They'd sooner save a pitcher from a shaking table than step in to help the man whose falling body shook it. And Lila imagined someone could cry for help in the middle of the room and earn little more than a tip of the cup and a raised brow. Not a place for all nights, to be sure, but a place for tonight. It wasn't until Lila was firmly stationed at the bar, fingers curled around a pint, that she let the questions take her mind and run free. The whys and hows, and most of all, what nows, because she knew she couldn't simply go back to not knowing and not seeing and not wondering, and she was so wrapped up in them. She didn't notice that the man had sat down beside her. Not until he spoke.
"Are you frightened?"
His voice was deep and smooth and foreign, but Lila looked up.
"Excuse me?"
she said, almost forgetting to keep her voice low.
"You are clutching your drink,"
explained the man, pointing at the fingers wrapped knuckles white around her glass. Lila relaxed, but only a little.
"Long night," she said, bringing the warm beer to her lips.
"And yet still young," mused the man, taking a sip from his tumbler.
Even in the Barren Tide, whose belly filled each night with a motley crew, the man seemed out of place. In the low light of the pub, he looked strangely faded. His clothes were dark grey, and he wore a simple short cloak held by a silver clasp. His skin was pale, made paler by the dark wood bar beneath his hands, his hair a strange, colourless shade just shy of black. When he spoke, his voice was steady without being sweet, empty in a way that gave her chills, and his accent had gravel in it.
"Not from around here, are you?"
she asked. The corner of his mouth tugged up at that.
"No."
He ran a finger absently around the rim of his glass, except it didn't feel absent. None of his motions did. He moved with a slow precision that made Lila nervous. There was something about him, odd and jarringly familiar at the same time. She couldn't see it, but she felt it. And then it struck her. That feeling. It was the same one she had looking into Kel's black eye, holding the stone, bound to the wall. A shiver. A tingle. A whisper. Magic. Lila tensed and hoped it didn't show as she lifted the pipe to her lips.
"I suppose we should be introduced," said the stranger, turning in his seat so she could see his face.
Lila nearly choked on her drink. There was nothing amiss in the angle of his jaw, or the set of his nose, or the line of his lips. But his eyes. One was greyish-green. The other was pitch-black.
"My name is Holland."
A chill ran through her. He was the same as Kel, and yet entirely different. Looking into Kel's eye had been like looking through a window into a new world. Strange and confusing, but not frightening. Looking into Holland's eye made her skin crawl. Dark things swirled just beneath the smooth black depths. One word whispered through her mind. Run. She didn't trust herself to lift her glass again in case her hand shook, so she nudged it away and casually dug a shilling from her pocket.
Bard,
she said by way of introduction and farewell. She was about to push away from the counter when the man caught her wrist, pinning it to the weathered wood between them. A shiver ran up her arm at his touch, and the fingers of her free hand twitched, tempted toward the dagger under her cloak. But she resisted.
"And your first name, miss?"
She tried to pull free, but his grip was made of stone. He didn't even appear to be trying.
"Delilah!"
she growled.
"Lila, if you like. Now let me go, unless you want to lose your fingers."
Again his lips tugged into something that wasn't quite a smile.
"Where is he, Lila?"
Her heart lurched.
"Who?"
Holland's grip tightened in warning. Lila winced.
"Do not lie. I can smell his magic on you."
Lila held his gaze.
"Perhaps because he used it to cuff me to a wall after I robbed him blind and tied him to a bed. If you're looking for your friend, don't look at me. We met on bad terms and parted on worse."
Holland's grip loosened and Lila let out an inward sigh of relief. But it died an instant later when Holland was suddenly on his feet. He took her roughly by the arm and dragged her toward the door.
"What in bloody hell are you doing?"
she snapped, boots scraping against the warm floor as she tried and failed to gain purchase.
"I told you we are not friends."
"We'll see,"
said Holland, driving her forward. The patrons of the Barren Tide never even looked up from their drinks. Bastards, thought Lila as she was shoved roughly out into the street. The moment the pub door closed behind them, Lila went for the revolver at her belt. But for someone whose movement seemed so slow, Holland was fast, impossibly fast. And by the time she pulled the trigger, she'd fired into nothing but air. Before the shot even finished sounding, Holland reappeared, this time at her back. She felt him there, felt the air shift the barest moment before one of his hands closed around her throat, pinning her shoulders against his chest. The other hand wrapped around the fingers on her pistol and brought the barrel to rest against her temple. The whole thing had taken less than a breath.
"Divest yourself of weapons," he instructed, "or I will do it for you."
His grip wasn't crushing. If anything, his hold was casual, confident. And Lila had been around cutthroats long enough to know that the ones you truly had to fear were the ones who gripped their guns loosely, like they'd been born holding them. Lila used her free hand to dig the knife out of her belt and drop it to the ground. She freed a second from her back. A third she usually kept in her boot, but it was sitting on her bed, ruined. Holland's hand slid from her throat to her shoulder, but he cocked the pistol in warning.
"What? No cannons?"
he asked dryly.
"You're mad," growled Lila. "Your friend Kel, he's long gone."
"Do you think?" asked Holland. "Let's find out."
The air around them began to crackle with energy, with magic. And Holland was right. She could smell it. Not flowers, as with Kel. Flowers and something else, something grassy and clean. Instead, Holland's power smelled metallic like heated steel. It singed the air. She wondered if Kel would be able to smell it too, if that's what Holland wanted. There was something else in that magic, not a smell, but a sense all the same, something sharp, like anger, like hate, a fierceness that didn't show in the lines of Holland's face. No, his face was startlingly calm, terrifyingly calm.
"Scream," he said.
Lila frowned.
"What do you—"
The question was cut off by pain. A bolt of energy like bottled lightning shot up her arm where he gripped it, dancing over her skin and electrifying her nerves, and she cried out before she could stop herself. And then, almost as quickly as the pain came, it vanished, leaving Lila breathless and shaking.
"You bastard!"
she snarled.
"Call his name," instructed Holland.
"I can assure you he's not going to come," she said, stumbling over the words. "Certainly not for me. We—"
Another wave of pain, this one brighter, sharper, and Lila clenched her jaw against the scream and waited for the pain to pass, but this time it didn't. It only worsened, and through it she could hear Holland say calmly,
"Perhaps I should start breaking bones."
She tried to say no, but when she opened her mouth to answer, all she heard was a cry. And then, as if encouraged, the pain worsened. She called Kel's name then, for all the good it would do her. He wouldn't come. Maybe if she tried, this madman would realize that and let her go. Find another form of bait. The pain finally petered out, and Lila realized she was on her knees, one hand gripping the cold stone street, the other wrenched up behind her, still in Holland's grip. She thought she was going to be sick.
"Better," said Holland.
"Go to hell," she spat.
He jerked her up to her feet and back against him and brought the gun beneath her chin.
"I've never used a revolver," he said in her ear, "but I know how they work. 6 shots, yes? You fired one. That leaves 5 more if the gun was full. Do you think I could fire the rest without killing you? Humans die so easily, but I bet if I'm clever—"
He let the gun slide down her body, pausing at her shoulders, her elbow, before trailing down her side to her thigh and coming to rest against her knee.
"The sooner he comes, the sooner I will let you go. Call his name."
"He won't come," she whispered bitterly. "Why do you refuse to believe—"
"Because I know our friend," said Holland.
He lifted his gun-wielding hand. Lila shuddered with relief as the kiss of metal left her skin, and wrapped his arm casually around her shoulders.
"He is near. I can hear his boots on the street stones. Close your eyes. Can you hear him?"
Lila squeezed her eyes shut, but all she could hear was the thud of her heart and the thought racing through her mind. "I don't want to die. Not here. Not now. Not like this."
"Bring him to me," whispered Holland.
The air began to hum again.
"Don't!"
Lila's bones lit up with pain. It shot from her skull to her weathered boots and back, and she screamed. And then suddenly the agony stopped, and the sound died on her lips, and Holland let go. She crumpled forward to the cobbled street, the stones scraping against her knees and palms as she caught herself. Through the pounding in her head, she heard Holland's voice say,
"There you are!"
She dragged her head up and saw Kel standing in the road, the strange, magical boy in his black coat looking breathless and angry. Lila couldn't believe it. He'd come back. But But why had he come back? Before she could ask, he looked straight at her, one eye black and one blue and both wide, and said a single word. Run!
2. Kel had been standing on the bridge, leaning against the rail and trying to make sense of how and why he'd been set up. The false letter, the humble plea, the compelled cutthroats, when he caught the scent of magic on the air. Not a faint tendril either, but a flare. A beacon of light in a darkened city, and a signature he would know anywhere. Heated steel and ash. Holland. Kell's feet carried him toward it. It wasn't until he stepped off the south edge of the bridge that he heard the first scream. He should have stopped right then. Should have thought things through. It was a blunt and obvious trap. The only reason Holland would send up a flare of power was if he wanted to be noticed, and the only person in Grey London who would notice him was Kel. But he still broke into a sprint. "Were you followed?" Lila had asked him. "No, they can't follow me here." But Kel had been wrong. No one in the world could follow him except for Holland. He was the only one who could and had, which meant that he was after the stone. It also meant that Kel should be running away from the signature and the scream, not toward them. The voice cried out again, and this time he was near enough to recognize the source of the cry being raked across the heavy air. Lila. Why would Holland go after her? But Kel knew the answer. It sat like a weight in his chest. Holland would go after Lila because of him. Because in a world with so little magic, every trace stood out, and Lila would have traces, both his magic and the stones, written all over her. Kel knew how to cover his. Lila couldn't possibly. She'd be like a torch. It's her own fault, thought Kel even as he ran toward the scream. Her own damn fault. He raced down the street, ignoring the burn across his ribs and the voice in his head that told him to leave her, to get away while he still could. A blunt and obvious trap. He cut down along the river, through an alley, around a bend, and came to a staggering halt on a narrow street just in time to hear Lila's scream cut off, to see her body sagging forward to the cobblestones. Holland stood over her, but his eyes were trained on Kel.
"There you are,"
he said as if he were happy to see the other Antari. Kel's mind spun. Lila looked up. "Run," he told her. But she just kept staring at him. "Lila, go!" Her eyes focused then and she staggered to her feet. But Holland caught her by the shoulder and pressed a pistol to the base of her neck.
"No, Lila,"
he said in his calm, infuriating way.
"Stay."
Kel's hands curled into fists.
"What is this about, Holland?" "You know quite well. You have something that isn't yours."
The stone hung heavy in his pocket. No, it wasn't his, but it wasn't Holland's either, and it certainly didn't belong to the White Throne. Had the power-hungry Danes possessed the talisman, they never would have relinquished it, let alone sent it away. But who would? Who did? With its power, Astrid and Athos would be nearly invincible, yes. But a commoner could use the stone's magic to become a king. In a world starving for power, why would anyone go to such lengths to be rid of it? Fear, thought Kel. Fear of the magic and fear of what would happen if it fell into the twins' hands. Astrid and Athos must have learned of the stone and its escape and sent Holland to retrieve it.
"Give me the stone, Kel."
His mind spun.
"I don't know what you're talking about."
Holland gave him a withering look. His fingers tightened almost imperceptibly around Lila, and power crackled across her skin. She bit back a scream and fought to stay on her feet.
"Stop!" demanded Kel.
Holland did.
"Will you make me repeat myself?"
he asked.
"Just let her go," said Kel. "The stone first," said Holland.
Kel swallowed as he drew the talisman from his coat.
It sang through his fingertips, wanting to be used.
"You can try and take it from me," he said, "as soon as you let her go."
Even as the words left Kell's lips, he regretted them. The corner of Holland's mouth curled up grimly. He withdrew his hand, one finger at a time, from Lila's arm. She staggered forward and spun on him.
"Fly away, little bird," he said, his gaze still trained on Kell.
"Go!" snapped Kell.
He could feel Lila's eyes hanging on him, but he wasn't foolish enough to let his own stray from Holland. Not now. And he let out a small breath when he finally heard her boots echoing on the street stones.
"Good," he thought. "Good." "That was foolish," said Holland, tossing the revolver aside as if it were beneath him. "Tell me, are you as arrogant as you seem, or only naive?"
"Holland, please."
The Antari's gaze darkened.
"You look at me, Kell, and think we are alike, that we are the same even, one person on two divergent paths. Perhaps you think our power bonds us. Allow me to correct your misapprehension. We may share an ability, you and I, but that does not make us equals."
He flexed his fingers, and Kell had the sneaking suspicion that this was going to end badly. Holland had fought against the Danes. Holland had spilled blood and life and magic. Holland had nearly claimed the White Throne as his own. Kell must seem like a spoiled child to the other Antari. But Kell still had the stone. It was bad magic, forbidden magic, but it was something. It called to him and he tightened his grip, the jagged side digging into his palm. Its power pressed at his edges, wanting to be let in, and he resisted, keeping a wall between the talisman's energy and his own. He didn't need much. He only needed to summon something inanimate, something that would stop Holland without turning on them both. A cage, he thought, and then commanded.
A cage!
The stone hummed in his hand and black smoke began to pour between his fingers and... But Holland didn't wait. A gust of wind ripped through the air and slammed Kell forcefully into the door of a shop behind him. The stone tumbled from his grip, the wisps of black smoke dissolving back into nothing as the talisman hit the street. Before Kell could lunge for it, the metal nails of another door shuddered free and sang through the air, driving into his coat and pinning him to the wood. Most of the nails found fabric, but one of them found flesh, and Kell gasped in pain as the spike drove through his arm and into the door behind him.
"Hesitation is the death of advantage," mused Holland as Kell fought in vain against the metal pinnings.
He willed them to move, but Holland willed them to stay. And Holland's will proved stronger.
"What are you doing here?"
asked Kell through gritted teeth. Holland sighed.
"I thought it would be obvious," he said, stepping toward the stone. "I'm cleaning up a mess."
As Holland made his way toward the talisman, Kell fought to focus on the metal pinning him. The nails began to tremble as his will pushed against the other Antari's. They slid free an inch. Kell clenched his jaw as the one in his arm shifted, Holland's attention wavering as he knelt to fetch the stone from the ground.
"Don't,"
warned Kell, but Holland ignored him. He took up the talisman and straightened, weighing it in his palm. His will and attention were both centered on the stone now, and this time, when Kell focused, the nails holding him shuddered and slid free. They drew themselves out of the wall, and out of his coat and his flesh, and clattered to the ground just as Holland held the stone up to the nearest lamplight.
"Drop it,"
ordered Kell, clutching his wounded arm. Holland didn't. Instead, he cocked his head and considered the small black stone.
"Have you figured out yet how it works?"
And then, as Kell lunged forward, Holland's thin fingers folded over it. Such a small gesture, slow, casual. But the moment his fist closed, black smoke poured between his fingers and swept around Kell. It happened so fast. One moment he was surging forward, and the next his legs froze mid-step. When he looked down, he saw shadows swirling around his boots.
"Stay,"
commanded Holland as the smoke turned to steel, heavy black chains that grew straight out of the street and clanged as they locked around Kell's ankles, bolting him in place. When he reached for them, they burned his hands, and he pulled back, hissing in pain.
"Conviction is key,"
observed Holland, running his thumb over the stone surface.
"You believe that magic is an equal, a companion, a friend. But it is not. The stone is proof. You are either magic's master or its slave."
"Put it down," said Kell. "No good will come of it."
"You're right," said Holland, still clutching the stone. "But I have my orders."
More smoke poured forth from the talisman, and Kell braced himself. But the magic didn't settle, didn't take shape. It swirled and curled around them as if Holland hadn't yet decided what to do with it. Kell summoned a gust of air, hoping to dispel it, but the wind passed straight through, billowing Holland's cloak, but leaving the dark magic untouched.
"Strange," said Holland, as much to himself as to Kell. "How one small rock can do so much."
His fingers tightened around the stone then, and the smoke coiled around Kell. Suddenly it was everywhere, blotting out his vision and forcing its way into his nose and mouth, down his throat, choking him, smothering him. And then it was gone. Kell coughed and gasped for breath and looked down at himself, unhurt. For an instant, he thought the magic had failed. And then he tasted blood. Kell brought his fingers toward his lips, but stopped when he saw that his entire palm was wet with red. His wrists and arms felt damp, too.
"What?" he started, but couldn't finish.
His mouth filled with copper and salt. He doubled over and retched before losing his balance and collapsing to his hands and knees in the street.
"Some people say magic lives in the mind, others the heart," said Holland quietly. "But you and I both know it lives in the blood."
Kell coughed again, and fresh red dotted the ground. It dripped from his nose and mouth. It poured from his palms and wrists. Kell's head spun and his heart raced as he bled out onto the street. He wasn't bleeding from a wound. He was just bleeding. The cobblestones beneath him were quickly turning slick. He couldn't stop it. He couldn't even get to his feet. The only person who could break the spell was staring down at him with a resignation that bordered on disinterest.
"Holland, listen to me," pleaded Kell. "You can..."
He fought to focus.
"The stone. It can make..."
"Save your breath."
Kell swallowed and forced the words out.
"You can use the stone to break your seal."
The white Antara raised a charcoal brow and then shook his head.
"This thing,"
he said, tapping the silver circle at his shoulder,
"is not what's binding me."
He knelt before Kell, careful to avoid the spreading blood.
"It's only the iron."
He pulled aside his collar to reveal the mark, scorched into the skin over his heart.
"This is the brand."
The skin was silvery, the mark strangely fresh, and even though Kell couldn't see Holland's back, he knew the symbol went all the way through. A soul seal. A spell burned not only into one's body, but into one's life. Unbreakable.
"It never fades," said Holland, "but Athos still reapplies the mark now and then, when he thinks I'm wavering."
He looked down at the stone in his hand.
"Or when he's bored."
His fingers tightened around it, and Kell coughed up more blood. Desperately, he reached for the coin pendants around his neck, but Holland got there first. He dug them out from under Kell's collar and snapped the cords with a swift tug, tossing the tokens away down the alley. Kel's heart sank as he heard the sound of them bouncing into the dark. His mind spun over the blood commands, but he couldn't seem to hold the words in his head, let alone shape them. Every time one rose up, it fell apart, broken by the thing killing him from the inside. Every time he tried to make a word, more blood filled his mouth. He coughed and clutched at syllables, only to choke on them. He stammered, but the magic forced blood up his throat, blocking the word. Holland clucked his tongue.
My will against yours, Kel. You will never win.
Please, Kel gasped, breath ragged. The dark stain beneath him was spreading too fast.
Don't do this.
Holland gave him a pitying look.
You know I don't have a choice. Make one.
The metallic smell of blood filled Kel's mouth and nose. His vision faltered again. One arm buckled beneath him.
Are you afraid of dying?
Asked Holland as if genuinely curious.
Don't worry. It's really quite hard to kill Antari. But I can't have...
He was cut off by a glint of metal in the air and the ringing sound of its striking bone as it connected with his skull. Holland went down hard, the stone tumbling from his grip and skittering several feet into the dark. Kel managed to focus his eyes enough to see Lila standing there, clutching an iron bar with both hands.
Am I late?
Kel let out a small dazed laugh that quickly dissolved into racking coughs. Fresh blood stained his lips. The spell hadn't broken. The chains around his ankles began to tighten and he gasped. Holland wasn't attacking him, but the magic still was. He tried desperately to tell Lila, but he couldn't find the air. And thankfully, he didn't need it. She was ahead of him. She snatched up the stone, swiped it across the bloody ground, and then held it out in front of her like a light.
Stop!
She ordered. Nothing.
Go away!
The magic faltered. Kel pressed his hands flat into the pool of blood beneath him.
Us! Anasai!
He said and coughed, the command finally passing his lips without Holland's will to force it down. And this time the magic listened. The spells broke. The chains dissolved to nothing around his legs and Kel's lungs filled with air. Power flooded through what little blood was left in his veins. It felt like there was nearly none.
"Can you stand?"
asked Lila. She helped him to his feet and the whole world swayed, his sight plunging into black for several horrible seconds. He felt her grip on him tighten.
"Keep it together,"
she said.
"Holland,"
he murmured, his voice sounding strange and far away in his own ears. Lila looked back at the man sprawled on the ground. Her hand closed over the stone, and smoke poured out.
"Wait," said Kel shakily.
But the chains were already taking shape, first in smoke, and then in the same dark metal he'd only just escaped. They seemed to grow straight out of the street and coil around Holland's body, his waist and wrists and ankles, pinning him to the damp ground as he had pinned Kel. It wouldn't hold him long, but it was better than nothing. At first, Kel marveled that Lila could summon something so specific. Then he remembered she didn't need to have power. She needed only to want a thing. The stone did the rest.
"No more magic,"
he warned as he shoved the stone into her pocket, the strain showing on her face. Her grip had vanished for a moment, and when he took a step forward, he nearly collapsed. But Lila was there again to catch him.
"Steady now,"
she said, pulling his arm around her narrow shoulders.
"I had to find my gun. Stay with me."
Kel clung to consciousness as long as he could. But the world was dangerously quiet, the distance between his thoughts and his body growing further apart. He couldn't feel the pain in his arm where the nail had struck, couldn't feel much of anything, which scared him more than the pressing dark. Kell had fought before, but never like this. Never for his life. He'd gotten into his fair share of scrapes, most of them Rye's fault, and had had his fair share of bruises, but he'd always walked away intact. He'd never been seriously hurt, never struggled to keep his own heart beating. Now he feared that if he stopped fighting, if he stopped forcing his feet forward and his eyes open, that he might actually die. He didn't want to die. Rye would never forgive him if he died.
"Stay with me," echoed Lila.
Kell tried to focus on the ground beneath his boots, on the rain that had started to fall, on Lila's voice. The words themselves began to blur together, but he held on to the sound as he fought to keep the darkness at bay. He held on as she helped him over the bridge that seemed to go on and on forever, and through the streets that wound and tipped around them. He held on as Hans, Lila's, and then another's dragged him through a doorway and up a flight of old stairs and into a room, stripping off his blood-soaked clothes. He held on until he felt a cot beneath him, and Lila's voice stopped, and the thread was gone. And then he finally, gratefully, plummeted down into black. 3. Lila was soaked to the bone. Halfway across the bridge, the sky had finally opened up. Not a drizzle, as London often seemed to favour, but a downpour. Within moments they had been soaked through. It certainly didn't make dragging the half-conscious Kell any easier. Lila's arms ached from holding him up. She nearly fumbled him twice, and by the time she reached the back door of the stone's throw, Kell was barely conscious, and Lila was shivering, and all she could think was that she should have kept running. She hadn't lived this long and stayed this free by stopping to help every fool who got himself into trouble. It was all she could do to keep herself out of trouble, and whatever else Holland was, he was clearly trouble. But Kell had come back. He didn't have to. Didn't have any reason to, but he had all the same, and the weight of it clung to her when she fled, slowing her down before finally dragging her boots to a stop. Even as she turned around, raced back, a small part of her had hoped that she'd be too late. Hoped they'd already be gone. But the rest of her wanted to get there in time, if only to know why. Why had he come back? Lila asked him that very question as she was dragging him to his feet. But Kell didn't answer. His head lolled against her collar. What the hell had happened? What had Holland done to him? Lila couldn't even tell if Kell was still bleeding. She didn't see an obvious wound, but he was covered in blood, and it made her wish she'd struck Holland a second time for good measure. Kell made a soft sound between a gasp and a groan, and Lila started talking, worried that he might die on her and it would somehow be her fault, even though she'd come back. "Stay with me," she'd said, wrapping his arm around her shoulders. With his body so close to hers, all she could think of was the smell. Not of blood, that didn't bother her, but of the other scents, the ones that clung to Kell and to Holland. Flowers and earth, and metal and ash. "I can smell his magic on you." Is that what it was? The scent of magic? She had noticed Kell's in a passing way when she first dragged his body across her bedroom floor. Now, with his arm draped around her, the scent was overpowering. The trace of Holland's burning steel lingered in the air. And even though the stone was safely in her pocket, she could smell it too, its scent washing over the alley, like sea and wood smoke, salt and darkness. She felt a moment of pride for the strength of her senses until she remembered that she hadn't smelled Kell's flowers or the stone smoke on herself as she made her way to the barren tide, or as she sat at the counter, and Holland had tracked her there by both. But the rain fell heavy and steady, and soon she could smell nothing but water on stones. Maybe her nose wasn't strong enough. Maybe the scent of magic was still there beneath the rain. She didn't know if it could be expunged or at least dampened, but she hoped the storm would help cover their trail. She was halfway up the stairs, Kell's boots leaving red-tinged water in their wake, when a voice stopped her.
"What in God's name are you doing?"
Lila twisted around to see Baron, and Kell nearly slipped from her grasp. She caught him round the